Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Big MX Radio Podcast. I am your host, Brad Gebhardt. With me on the line, returning after co-hosting many, many episodes of the Big MX Radio Podcast, some would say that he got this podcast to where it is now, making up about 25% of my gross income annually. Dave Drakes, welcome back to the podcast.
What's up, buddy? It feels good to be back, man. I missed you.
Oh, this feels like an old, this like fits like an old pair of riding gloves right here. You know,
right?
You know when you like you forget your regular pair and you remember you have that other pair of gloves, that older pair of gloves in the bottom of your gear bag, and you slide them on for one session. And you're like, oh, I forgot these feel good. That's what this feels like right now.
I love that, dude. I missed you, bud.
How the heck are you? It's good to have you on. For those who have only started listening to the podcast in the last little while, Dave Drakes from the Collective Experience, as well as Cobra Motorcycles, has been on the podcast. I guarantee you're on almost 100 of these over the last 10 years. 12 years podcasting with Big MX Radio, Dave.
No, dude.
And God. Have you been on since COVID?
Oh, yeah, before COVID, for sure.
After COVID, since COVID.
Oh, yeah, I have. I think we were on after I moved to Texas, even.
Okay. When did you move to Texas?
Yeah, we January 22. So I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, okay, so we did some from Texas.
For sure.
But it's been at least two winters. It's been two Supercross seasons.
I think so, yeah. It's just, dude, you're running around like a madman now, dude. You're the big man behind the lens in a lot of these things, dude. I'm going to get an autograph from you.
Yeah, I don't know about all that. I do know that my favorite events of the year are Loretta Lynn's, Motocross Destinations, and the Millville. The Millville. Actually, yeah, the last time I saw you was at in person was at 2020.
No, it was after that, because you came. You came to no. I was saw at, you at minute. You were
Minneapolis
at Minnesota
2022.
Last time.
Yep, that's 22 though.
We were there. Yeah,
24 now.
So 22. Jeez,
bro, it's 26 now. Did I say it's 24? My God, no, it's 26 now, dude.
But yeah, so it was back then in person. I think I talked to you a bunch since then. Whatever.
Of course. But I'm just saying it's been a minute.
You and I were at 2019 Millville, the last outdoor that you and I were at.
Yes, I've been to some outdoors since, but you and I have been ships passing in the night. At that time, what originally took you down to Texas was the company you have on. You're repping them. Is this like
postmortem?
Yeah. Are you yearning or grieving the company?
No, definitely not. I just have so many of these shirts, dude. Like, as anyone knows, when there's a startup or you're
it's
part
the
of
arms
startup
nice
or,
too, yeah.
Or you're, yeah, it kind of does. Or like your buddies in a startup or whatever, they print these like it's nothing, dude. So I've got like 30 of these shirts and I just always have them. Anyone that even
that was your severance package? They just gave you a box of shirts.
Bunch of t-shirts.
Place is going under.
A bunch of t-shirts, but a bunch of my buddies, like the CTO, like he's one of my really good friends, and Mary's like best friends with his wife and stuff, and they're good people. I still stop by there and annoy the absolute crap out of them like every couple of weeks, which is great for me. So it's a good group.
Fair enough. And I think for the first time that we've ever podcasted together, we can't figure out whose hair's longer, because
dude, you're letting it grow. Hey,
I got the hockey flow going. It's it's still, as far as Winnipeg's considered, it's still fucking midwinter here because we had minus 20 temperatures today. Warmed up in the afternoon though. But you're up in Michigan right now. Why's that?
Up in Michigan, buddy. We got a new gig.
Tell me about the new gig.
Just started with Cobra Moto, the super fast 50s that everyone knows and loves. Started with them, and back in November, one of their co-owners reached out, and we just started talking moto, and it just so happened they had a spot open, and yeah, they want to launch some really cool stuff, dude, and I'm really excited about it. It's such a cool company. One thing that I always get on them about, and I did not know this, and like a lot of people don't, I consider us to be core Moto guys, is, dude, I did not know they were like 100% American made. I thought they were like, oh yeah, they make some stuff in America, but like,
dude, as well as their aviation stuff as well, which you've got to be interested in that as well. People don't realize
it's pretty rad.
Cobra on the aviation side is huge, and they do some high performance stuff.
Really high performance, dude. Like they know how to make a fast two stroke. I'll say that. They're so vertically integrated. Like they make their own like bars, wheels, fork lugs, like seat. They do everything. And I'm like, dude, I have never seen a company that makes so much stuff, dude. It's absolutely insane.
Totally.
So, super, super cool to see that. Yeah, dude,
that's really exciting. And I know that you're working on that brand new 65 with an extra 20 cc's there, so that'll something be exciting. Like that, and I can't wait to see Fender the Sender on that thing sometime in 2027.
Yeah, no, dude, I'm excited. I'm really stoked about like now that I'm like part of the company. I'm like, oh, dude, we're losing so many kids because like you know they're growing up, they're getting ready for like you know the next size up, and they're like you know aging out of their 65 classes and stuff,
and they do so quickly too, by the way,
and they do so quickly, and they're all such great talent that I'm like, no, I want to get them back here, dude, get them back here, let's put them on a bike and get them back, you know. And, but yeah, dude, Cobra is really cool in the way that they foster that pedigree, dude, in their riders. They foster that talent, that just that winning legacy, and it's really cool to be a part of that. And like the team I get a chance to work with is really great too. They do love this stuff, and it's fun, dude. They just like having fun, making good stuff, and they're such smart dudes. And they make learning the crappy stuff, like pretty cool, dude. Like the stuff that really should be putting me to sleep. It's like, oh wow, this is really interesting. You know what I mean? So
it certainly is. And honestly, one of the things that I think is the coolest element to that Cobra Elite program is the way that the kids themselves can kind of create their own little community and team at the track. Like they do hang out together, and they can look up to a kid like Mickey Fluhart, who is like, he was on the 50s, he's dominating, moves up to the 65s, he's still crushing it. And these kids, they kind of create this camaraderie, and sometimes they ride together, and that means sometimes the parents end up, hey, linking up, and then we head out to this this training facility, and like that's how the team sort of helps each other sort of continue to move up, and like just sort of give back to it. Like it literally cultivates talent and ability within itself. It's a really neat thing. You're very blurry, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm so. I got you on a good camera and good.
Oh, all good.
Technical difficulties.
But, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, you're 100% right, dude. Like they're
be soft impressions for the rest of the podcast.
No, it's rad to see like
there you go.
Communities. It's cool to see like the it's just like the talent that they have, dude. All of these kids are just they're rippers. Their families are all behind them, and it's cool. One thing that I did talk to a few people about, I'm like, man, I've been out of the mini like amateur community for a little while, and I'm like, I don't remember mini dads being like ultra gnarly, but I'm like, I know.
Oh, dude, they gnarly now.
They're
gnarly. I don't shoot 50 kids at Loretta's anymore. I did it one season, really? 1 year. 50 parents, crazy. People who, like, they lose their minds over whether P-Dub class or the E-50. Like, these results, they mean everything, but they mean nothing in the grand scheme. Yeah. And I've honestly told a lot of parents that, like, if I was doing the amateur super motocross thing, you wouldn't see us try for Loretta's until it's, like, mini senior time.
And a lot of kids are starting to, like, the more that I talk to are kind of like, yeah, you know, Loretta's isn't a make or break like it used to be.
No.
And I look at kids like I want to say, like, our era, right? Like, Kennard. Dude, he wasn't winning Loretta's every single year. And, dude, he became one of the sickest riders ever, you know, once he got on big bikes. You know what I mean? Bogle, same way. He wasn't winning everything, but like, you know, like you can, the
oh
list
yeah,
goes
no, you can go through
on for
any
guys that
year
are,
and look at like who's kicking ass in the 65 class, and then you'll look at that roster and you'll see like an Aaron Plessinger in there, but he's not first, he's sixth.
he's
And what
set,
you find
yes,
is a
yep.
lot of these kids that like they peak early and they're just crushing it from a super young age. I think it's pretty unsustainable. And what happens is there's a lot of pressure to continue to be on that edge. And the longer you spend on that edge, the more time, obviously, it's a very dangerous sport. And also you sacrifice possible burnout. It's hard on the family. It's hard, like, you know what I mean? I'm not saying like it's better to be mediocre in those younger years, but to be at the absolute pinnacle that long, it's tough.
It's hard, yeah. And dude, you took the words right out of my mouth. You, if you look the 5 to 10, generally those are going to be the guys that are going to be your pro sport winners. The guys you see in Supercross, like it's very rare that you see a kid kind of like AC it or be an Eli Tomac. You know, and these are guys that are, they're once in a blue moon that you'll see somebody that dominates from shaft drive and like 50 senior all the way through to 65s, 80 super minis and beyond, you know?
Right.
So yeah, it's the times are changing right now where I think, yes, Loretta's is a great like barometer almost for like, you know, if you're going to be somebody one day, 100%, but it's not
The
the
cream does
only
rise to
thing.
the top there. You like you
Always,
can't argue with
for
that,
sure.
but
For
like
sure. For sure. But you don't have to win Loretta's to have a successful
right.
motocross, supercross career. I'll say
Yeah.
that. Back when, you know, you and I were first getting on big bikes, you kind of had to. There wasn't,
Yeah.
if you didn't win the Loretta, it's like, you know,
Yeah,
but
there's a lot of
no,
guys,
it's,
or they got the opportunity they got because of their
yeah,
success at the ranch. Guys like
yes,
Ryan Sipes,
100%.
guys like, and honestly, like it wasn't until like Dungey, obviously he impressed guys like Carmichael and Roger with that Suzuki test that they did. But it wasn't until the very, very end that he got that title and like
Yeah.
basically solidified, okay, well, now we'll give this kid the chance that he's earned, so to speak. And then he did a lot
100%.
with it where, like I it's unfortunately injuries plays into this one. So like a kid like Jett Reynolds, I feel terrible for a guy like Jett Reynolds, but
Yeah.
it's that his professional career honestly has lasted longer because he keeps getting a few opportunities. But if he had only had the opportunity with the pro circuit, I don't think he would have raced 10 races. He'd had more motos at Loretta Lynn's than he did as a pro.
Yeah,
And
and that
that's
list,
tough, man. Like
100%. Yeah, I agree.
being at the absolute pinnacle of it, like and having to do like the basically the amateur schedule that it is now, like they're Loretta's qualifiers start in February, Spring Nationals, maybe you do Daytona, you got the Texas Two-Step, Cal Classic. Like you know what I mean? It's go, go, go. They always say, oh, the amateur kids don't race anymore. Yeah, they do. There's
Yeah.
a pressure to be active in that community and be at the races. Part of it's the kids that want to be there and the sponsors want you to be there to show up for the support. But also there is sort of a keeping up with the Joneses sort of like, if you're out of sight, out of mind for these moto parents to be at Spring-a-Ding. And be at like the is it what's the one that comes before that? Is it Underground? No. What's it? Freestone. You go Freestone and then Spring-a-Ding. Like if you're not there, like are you really invested? Like you know what I mean? Like results aside, they want to see you there. They want to see you're doing the whole thing. It's a lot of diesel. It's a lot of race bikes. It's a lot of facility fees. My God.
Yeah, and it goes on and on, dude. But
Were we supposed to talk about the
you nailed it.
Indianapolis Supercross? Or
At some point, but you know, but no, it's. I dude, I agree so much. And again, dude, we didn't. I didn't know about Dungey until he won that two-stroke championship at 125C or 125cc schoolboy
Yeah.
at 05. Like I was like, who the heck is beating Matt LeMoyne, Zach Osborne, and Austin Stroop?
AJ
Like who is this?
Catanzaro.
AJ Catanzaro? Like who's this number 12 dude? And then of course pops up and kicks butt. So. Yeah, it's just, it's, there are so many avenues, but yeah, you're right. Cream rises to the top. the guys that win, they're guys and girls are they're amazing. But yeah, it's there are other ways that you can still have a pretty solid career not winning that thing. But yeah, dude, you got to get me and you down there to try to race the old slow farts class or something.
I think we'd race. There's a 35 sportsman or something.
If they just like Brown and like
MMA. Wait, are you 35 yet?
Short. Yeah, I just turned 35.
Attaboy. I'm 37. So yeah, I think we can do the 35 class, which means we're not in there with like anyone who scored points or anything, I don't think.
I hope not, dude, because literally I ride with Andrew Short in Texas sometimes.
Dude,
this kid rides one of the local drags. If they're
Is his kid okay? I heard he took a big spill.
Oh, I didn't hear about that, dude.
I thought saw him
rip it on his two stroke, dude. He's very quick on that two stroke. But yeah, dude, watching Andrew Short ride, I'm like, we don't do the same sport, dude. Don't do the same sport. Me and like the local fast like A rider, we don't do the same sport. So
yeah,
dirt bikes. I don't ride dirt bikes.
Yeah, which is funny because like compared to someone who straight up doesn't ride dirt bikes, you do ride dirt bikes. But that's just the reality of the fact that there's always another level. I remember as a kid looking up to local pro Matt Hamm, who would win a lot of the local races. You know him from FXR. And in one summer, I watched Matt Hamm lap up to like 8th or 9th in one of the local pro races. And then the Canadian Nationals showed up to my favorite racetrack in Grunthal, and I watched Matt Hamm get lapped twice. And then 6 weeks after that, I went to Millville for the very first time and watched Ricky Carmichael lap up to 5th, including the guy who lapped Matt Hamm 2 weeks earlier.
Oh.
How fucking fast is Ricky Carmichael? Dude. If he's lapping the guy who laps the guy who laps other guys twice.
Dude.
Like, you know what I mean? So like, there's such a massive spectrum as far as like just like the speed that someone can, or the sense of mastery that someone can have when it comes to riding a dirt bike. Like, I'm literally jumping every jump on the track, and like say like a local pro like Josh Penner, like every 5 laps that guy's coming to get me.
Yeah,
like god damn it,
how?
Yeah, and I like, yeah, and I think I'm pushing it. Like I'm like, I'd like to think that like it's an exhilarating thrill ride like no other. Maybe I could coast a little bit less coming into the corners, but my God, I think I'm on the edge. And every 5 laps, there he goes. See ya.
Yep. It really is insane. I talk to my dad sometimes about like being able to watch, which I feel like you're in the same boat. Like what a blessing it was to be able to watch Ricky. Ride to watch James ride in person, watch Reed ride.
I got to watch James ride a 125 3 different times, and they're some of my most cherished memories as a fan.
Dude, it's absolute like, dude, and I try to like talk about what it was like to watch those guys ride, and I don't know if this is just our nostalgia or us feeling like, you know,
is it because we were kids? Like, I think it might be that.
I think it might be that, but like. There has to be something to be said where, like, he's the greatest of all time, Ricky. And Stu is the fastest man to ever, the most talented and fastest guy to ever throw a leg over a motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, watching those guys ride in real time, dude, it was literally like watching. You couldn't tell me there wasn't an aura glowing around those guys. Like, you couldn't tell me that every time Stu hit the track that, like, there were, like, there's like an aura, like a glow about like watching those guys ride.
There was. It's like when you watch Stu, he was the only thing in focus, even though he was like a blur.
Yeah, it was just there was like no way to describe it, and I try to talk to other people about it. I'm like, I don't think there will ever be another era like that era in moto. And I know that like there's guys who are like, you know, when Bob Hanna was racing and you had him and these guys and you know and Wardy was. I'm like, yeah, I get it. I hear you. Rick Johnson, all these guys, I get it.
Yeah.
It's different though, dude. It's different. And like when I hear those guys, I'm like, oh, those guys are like, they're on old bikes. They're probably just, they're going so slow, blah, blah, blah. And like, I hope that's not how we sound to like the Jet and Deegan era now, where I'm like, you think they're fast? You should have seen Carmichael at Southwick on the washboard going, wide open fifth gear. And like, they're probably like, oh, whatever, old man. Yeah, Deegan could scrub right by those guys. And I hope we don't sound like that. And I hope there's like, I'm conveying just how much in rarefied air we were in watching those guys ride.
Absolutely. I don't know. I don't know if this is a controversial take or not, but I think James Stewart in 2007 and 2008, 2009 is still faster than anyone is currently going. I believe that.
Dude, it's hard to argue. I honestly like I listen
I think
watching.
I don't think anyone has ever ridden as hard and as not like
Oh, yeah.
even I watch Eli every weekend. I watch all those guys. I don't think anybody in 2026 is as fast as James Stewart and Ricky Carmichael were in 2006.
It's hard to
Sorry.
argue. It's hard to argue. I will say, listening to
Like,
Kai Rowley talk on
I'll
Jet
listen to
Ski about,
arguments, but I'll be it's tough to sway me.
yeah. Like listening to Kai Rowley talk on Gypsy about when he was asked like you've gotten to see like literally like 3 decades worth of like fast guys. He was like at the tail end of like Everts. He had his own era, and now he's like he's at his tail end, but still gets to see got the chance to see Stu, Jet, all these guys. And he was like, yeah, I think Jet's the fastest guy I've ever seen. Stu did like the most insane things on a motorcycle, whereas like I didn't know how he did that, but like the fastest all out is Jet. And I see where he's coming from. But I was like, dude, I would be hard pressed. You'd be hard pressed to find a track that Stu couldn't. I want to say like he'd keep Jet busy, but it'd be so much more than that. Jet would have to ride so insanely fast, which he is. But Stu, I think Stu is just so stubborn. Him and Ricky, they would find that extra gear. They would figure out how to
Or
do it.
end up on his head trying to find that gear. Like,
Oh, for sure, for sure. But like, it's
it's
so,
actually
it's so
probably a good
difficult.
thing that James doesn't race Jet because they are both so fast, even though Jet is so quiet as far as his body language on the bike and his riding
Smooth.
style. But anytime that James Stewart ever didn't beat Jet, it would because he his bikes like he crashed out. There's it would be one or the other, which essentially as soon as like I don't know if his I wouldn't say skills got diminished or like the tail end of James's career, that's what it really turned into, is that he still wanted to go all out, and when he would, he'd end up on his head.
No,
The worst
totally
was, I
fair.
don't really, like, this has turned into, like, Remembering James Stewart podcast.
Yeah.
But, like, do you remember those, like, last couple of seasons in, like, 14 and 15 when, like, James Stewart would go, like, 8-7 for ninth overall and you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh. Or, like,
This
he'd
isn't
go
the same.
9-37 because he just straight up wouldn't race the second moto because he
Yeah.
just, it wasn't there.
Wattage.
I don't like
Yeah.
something was wrong. Like,
Yeah.
and it was the hardest to watch.
It yeah, I as a Super Stu fan, like yeah, I definitely agree. There were some hard watches there towards the end, but like still, dude, it's still
Or
so
like when he
freaking sick.
looped out
Like,
in Daytona, I think it
oh,
was.
dude,
And he
yep.
just like, he just fell straight back and you could see that he had hurt his back again. And you're like, God damn it, Stu. Like you like, and also I didn't get a chance to mention it, but like in time in his two the two seasons that we actually got Prime Ricky and Prime Stu, 05, 06, you had James breaks his arm or wrist or whatever it was at, I think it was Phoenix, the second round, second or third round. I think it was second round of 05. So he missed like 80% of the super second round. He
He
missed
got
like,
hurt, Dallas.
right. And then he wins Dallas.
I think I heard Dallas
No.
or Houston. Was it
Phoenix
Houston?
got hurt, came back, lost in Orlando, wins in Dallas. You want to bet? I'll look it up now.
Yeah, okay. I'm not down here.
You are though. People are listening.
I'm
They're
not.
doubting you. I'm gonna look this up in real time, and you're gonna look like a dumbass.
I'm not dumb.
Okay, Orlando, 250s. Chad Reed, James third. He fell. He was leading.
Is this is towards the at the end of the season, right?
Yeah. After he back. Doesn't race. Yeah. He doesn't race Daytona.
So he comes got hurt back in at.
Wait, no, it's this is backwards. Yeah, because he wasn't in Daytona. That's right. Yep. And then he races Irving, which is Dallas, the following weekend and wins. And then he also wins Seattle. Yes, he also won that one. And then the last person to ever win a 252 stroke or a 250 premier Supercross main event on a two stroke is Chad Reed. Vegas 05.
Dude, he, what a
fuck yeah.
I always go back to Dallas 05 where I saw it was I can't remember if it was heat race
one. James is wearing that green and yellow gear. So sick.
Dude, 100%. That the only person I would say that kind of that rivaled Stu's gear setup that year, Reed's Paisley.
Oh, the Paisley blue. That nothing colder than the Paisley blue back in the day, dude.
It was
the Paisley
like,
blue. The Paisley blue.
We
gotta
do like a show where we just talk about our favorite top fives. But dude, has to be all time.
Just all time kit.
That Stu's pink gear.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking like the rookie stew, not the swoosh side thing. Like he had the yellow with the zebra print.
No, it's,
I'm taking
it's like
literally
the 180.
Just the, yeah, no, it's 360 gear. Yes. It's 360 gear.
Yeah, the 360 with the sick pink.
So dude, good.
That was, and like people don't understand like.
And
like,
he's so little. You look at pictures from him. He's like 28 waist. So
yeah,
small.
Dude. Crazy back then, but
Reed with the Paisley, and then sometimes he would match that with the matte black helmet with the red on it.
With the red, yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Oh man, they just.
That was so the same year that actually the year after, Fox came out with that heart attack stuff that was kind of like matte black helmet and a black jersey. James only ever wore the helmet. But he wore it with the powder blue with the spider webs.
Yes.
He wore that at Hangtown that year when him and Ron were battling. It was the sickest. It never got better. Like, it's never been better.
That was like an old school throwback. No one talks about that up until that point. Okay, so take it Stewart, his first year, 02, West Coast, whatever. He was getting his feet wet, right?
Did
good.
Full chest protector.
Few guys.
I still want one of those. If I could find a full that the it's the Roost 2, I believe, and it has. If you could find me a pink one, I'd wear it now,
dude. Like, I his first Supercross season, Stu was a 16-year-old kid. He got beat a little bit by some guys, right?
With a birthday in December, by the way. Like his
exactly
literally
he just turned.
Yeah. Like the candles were still smoking when he raced
Anaheim
1.
We share the same birthday.
Oh, that's right. You're December as well.
So like get that one aside. That 03 was that 03 or 04? It was 04. That 04 Vegas
last,
and 04
his last down. Season on his last season on 125s.
Yep. So Hangtown was the first one, right? That or was it High Point or Hangtown?
Vegas was Vegas, Hangtown was an opening round. Yeah,
opening. Okay, Hangtown. Those were the only two races I can remember where I was like, "Wow, somebody passed Stu back while Stu was racing multiple." Like that was the first time I've seen some like Stu. Like, whoa, I gotta race. You know, up until but no one talks about that. Like, dude, you gotta give Roncada his flowers.
That 100%. Ron's the only one who gave James
else?
Anything.
Who else? I mean, granted, it was only for those two races. But, like, who else was like, I'm racing James Stewart right now. Not just he's playing cat and mouse with me. Or he went down, so I passed him.
No,
like,
nobody that year.
Nobody. You can even argue the year
James
before,
still won every moto aside from one.
Yeah, which is – it's nuts to me. So,
Yeah, on a 125.
On 125, dude, I cannot.
Do you remember those stupid scoops that they had on the cap?
The radiators.
Yeah, scoops looked like shit. They were carbon fibers, so they kind of look cool, but then you look at them now, you're like, those are not cool.
Those are not cool. And I used to think his bike was like, I'm like, dude, that is the pinnacle state of the art. It doesn't get any cooler. I look at it now, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure half those things are like Craigslist finds right now. You know, like, they had like the old school style fender, which I thought was so sleek. And now I'm like, man, that thing's a boat anchor, huh?
The 05, the back end of the 05 still holds up. The front end is looking not, a little bit. No, it's not.
Yes. So number plates and rear fender.
Yeah.
I think that you can keep those the same forever.
The back end of that motorcycle is beautiful. The way the number plates sort of swoop in.
Yep.
But on the stand, the back fender is always nice. It's pointed. It's not rounded off in any way. Nope. It's the same reason I hated that about my, 2016 KTM where the back fender kind of like just curls. It sags. Yeah. I'm like, that was so ugly. Same thing with my 06, 06 through 08 KX250F. Like it was this big, you're like, have you ever looked at how big the fenders were on those things? They're laughable.
I had an 06 250F.
Yeah, so
that laughed at me until 08 because I was broke boy racing. And dude, when I tell you, like going to pick up the UFO or a Turby's plastic in the dealer, you needed both hands for that rear fender.
Oh, yeah. No, dude. Fucking many of them. I will literally send you. I have a stack of those stupid fucking things.
Dude, it was so
I don't know why I still do.
Oh, my goodness. But dude.
But no, the 05 Cowie looks sick. The only thing we got robbed of, I don't think we'll ever truly get what the situation was with James doing nationals that year. I think he raced six of them, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And then he does his wrist when he was going down a hill in Unadilla.
I think it was Broome.
Broome? Where was
Broome it? Broome Tioga. Like that super stupid or super soft, like the wood chippy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It might have been Broome, but that's close to the end of the year, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's like the last three. It's in New York too, so it's a little ways from Unadilla, but it's still a New York track. Really fun to ride at. You'd like that track.
I bet I would.
But it was, man, what a cool time. And you know what? I was talking to a buddy of mine. You know what track I would love to see come back because I've never seen a track like it?
Steel City.
Steel City's that's a good one. But I still kind of feel like Steel City and High Point kind of have similarities. But remember Kenworthy, Troy?
Troy, yeah. Everyone wants Troy to come back.
That track, Brad, I have never seen. That was the end of an era kind of track to me.
Yeah, you were right. It's Broome Tioga because he goes 3:37.
Yeah, that one was gnarly. That was crazy. But
tell me about it.
I can do this with you for days, dude.
I know. That's why you were on the podcast like 100 times 3 years ago.
Oh, gosh, dude, I miss this. Miss it, bud.
Anyway, tell your story.
But I forgot what I was going to say, dude. You got me thinking about freaking Broome Tioga now. I'm just thinking about all the off-cambers.
Kenworthy's best track ever.
Dude, I have not seen a track that has whoops, big tabletops, bowl corners. I mean, like a loamy base and like infield, but like the jump faces were like a little bit of that like harder pack clay. You got ruts that develop, long straightaways. You got choppy sections. You got jumpy sections. Like I have not seen an outdoor track that looks like that. Dude, it was like a video game. It was like, in my opinion, what motocross like. I kind of miss about racing motocross. You know, now it's like, oh, it's got to be like the gnarliest, and it's got to be, you know, the most dissed up and rutted and deep. And I'm like, yeah, those tracks have to exist. Those are sick. But I miss those kind of tracks, man. Those look like kind of like the tracks that I grew up on. You know what I mean?
And, yeah.
I would love to see like a Kenworthy come back, dude. Like that track was just so cool.
Oh, I totally agree. I look at a lot of the old layouts, the things used to be a little bit less polished, a little bit less sweepy at times, but I think that was sort of the nuances of certain tracks. Like you had hairpin corners on a motocross track, which you don't often see.
I was just going to say tight inside corners. I was literally going to say that, dude. Tight 180s on a motocross track.
Nowadays, especially with the outdoors, you find a lot of like just blasting the outside and the outside is quite the trek. You know what I mean? So, a lot of tracks like that. And they all sort of set it like, because one track's successful, like it's a copycat league. We'll all sort of start to like at one point, Redbud didn't have sand rollers. They got that from, I don't know if they got that idea from Millville specifically, but they saw the fact, like the people enjoy the, and like to line up along the sand rollers at Millville. All of a sudden, Redbud has sand rollers, or everyone loves the LaRocco's leap. Now every track has to have some Godzilla jump that, you know what I mean?
Yep.
It's, copycat league, but.
Yeah. Anywho.
Love it. So Indy this last weekend, were you in attendance, sir?
I was not. So this was my first weekend actually being able to go home, to Texas. So took advantage of that and had to literally sit down and watch it from the couch. But as you know, Brad, ain't a bad view from your couch.
Hey, I don't mind watching Supercrosses from the couch. I do so from Canada. So yeah, it's like for me to enjoy it, like in the stadium, probably talking like $1,200, maybe $1,300 worth of travel expenses. So, I will watch from here unless I can get those expenses covered, which is, even ask the racers. That's tough to do.
Yeah. People will be surprised. There's a couple, there's a lot of mechanics out there that are paying their own way to get to races. So
yeah, you know all about that.
Yeah.
So we talked about the new gig. Let's talk about the old gig. Let's talk about the collective experience. Have you been doing that for 10 years now? What's the deal?
Dude, it's – so when did – that was – I got going like the later half of 2017. So we're almost coming up on 10 years, which is absolutely insane. And you were kind of privy to like the start of it. Like you were pretty pretty clued in when that thing kind of first got kicked off. But yeah, it's going strong, man. Like, you know, you've heard the story a million times. I kind of had a vision of like, man, I want to help out my buddies that are racing privateer and how can we get them some cash? And also I love just sharing the passion of the sport. That's why I can talk to you for hours. And like, just, I love talking moto. I love sharing all these cool contacts and people and all this other stuff, dude. And it springboarded to one of like, in my opinion, the best VIP experience in motorsports. I don't think anyone can do it cooler than we do it, dude. And yeah, there are some programs that have way bigger budgets, obviously, but the fact that we are fans, we tailor it for fans, and we make everyone feel like you are a family member of the collective, you are a part of that team you're working with. You now have buddies in industry that are like at pretty cool levels. And I know 12-year-old Brad and 12-year-old Dave would have loved to have the collective back in the day to be able to hang out with, like, you know, our racing heroes and the dudes that we have on our wall and like be able to say, hey, I have that mechanic's phone number on my phone, or hey, I met that guy and these are his, I got his signed goggles or signed jersey. And now I can text the team whenever I, you know, all this cool stuff, man. So yeah, we've really, really curated an experience that is second to none, man. And we've had so many people that have been interested in that and our internship program that have gone on to work in the industry, dude. Like we had people that worked for FL that helped launch Bubba's World podcast, that have worked for FXR, half of PRMX are guys from my program. A couple of guys that are,
You introduced Cole Beach to the world of motocross, right?
Yeah, dude, well, he was already part of it. Like he's a dude that we met back home in Connecticut. But yeah, dude, like we kind of got him his first like taste of what it's like to be in, you know, the big leagues. And he did photos for us for a day, dude. And then fast forward a year later, I'm like, oh my gosh, is that Cole Beach that's like running essentially all of like the media for Feld? You know what I mean? And getting a chance to be able to help springboard stuff like that, it's awesome. Getting them to introduce people to like yourself, dude, like what you do on a day-to-day basis, getting a chance to cover what you cover and have the podcast and have the connections you have, that's incredible for people to be able to meet someone like you. So yeah, I And I cherish it. I love the buddies that I have in Moto, and I'm like, well, maybe other people would like these dudes too. And it's great, man. It's such a great program, and we've been going strong. And I'm thankful that the industry's embraced it like it has. And I just want to keep growing and doing bigger and better, Brad. I want to keep this thing. I want to be the biggest thing in motorsports.
Ain't slowing down, man. How can people find out more information? And like, let's just like, first of all, where can people find out more information?
TheCollectiveXP.com, at TheCollectiveEX on Instagram, The Collective Experience on YouTube, TikTok. I mean, The Collective Experience, you'll see our shiny multicolored logo and a bunch of cool dirt bike stuff. So feel free to hit me up at contact at TheCollectiveXP.com with any questions. And yeah, we want to get everybody hooked up in motorsports.
All right, bro. So we're 10 days out from Birmingham. I'm Brad from Canada. I'm looking to possibly take part in the collective experience. What do you got for me?
So we've got our two programs that are doing phenomenal. The fan experience program, where you literally come in and just be a VIP. We treat you like gold. You get full access, meaning you don't have just a meet and greet time with the team. You are part of the team.
Oh,
You
sick.
get to
So
talk
I'm
to
like
them
part of the
and
team for the day.
you are part of the team for the day. You're not just
What
sitting
time do
down
I
there
show up? Like,
watching.
how long of a day is it?
So we tell people you can get there as early as Friday and then you stay super late until Saturday. A few guys even showed up to help finish setup on Sunday for a few guys, or teardown rather. So it really depends on whenever you want to show up. We tell people to get the most out of the day, show up for, a little bit after riders meeting, and that way, the full team's back. You get a chance to see everybody before all the hustle and bustle. You get a chance to walk the pits before anybody else, and really get a chance to see some of the bikes like right in front of your face. They pull them around the rigs and stuff like that,
Yeah.
warm them up and stuff, and you get a chance to really see them without a lot of that velvet rope. And you yourself are behind a velvet rope as well with teams that the people can select from. And we've got a litany of different teams that people can choose to hang out with, or different riders, what have you. And it's really fun. The internship program gets you literally hands-on working in a variety of different spots, whether that's be a media guy like Brad, or if you want to be a mechanic hopeful, or if you want to be a content creator or team manager. We can get you aligned with the team to kind of give you that first hands-on experience, that first world hands-on experience. And a lot of what we do afterwards is we help you with resume building. We give you contacts. Everybody walks away with like $1,500 in promo codes and savings and
Well,
all this free gear and like swag and stuff. There's some interns that I've had, Brad, and I'll send you the picture. A couple of times, like I haven't been able to get there to the races for like canceled flights, and I'll have buddies that kind of like know the program very well. They'll kind of handle it for me, and I get one intern that's like, dude, this was the best day of my life. Mitch Payton is so cool. Thanks again. I'm like, wait, what? It's like, who? And he's like, Mitch Payton. I'm like, what are you doing around Mitch Payton? He's like, oh, dude, the team I'm working with, one of his buddies is a wrench for Mitch. So I went over and said hi to him, and Mitch was like, oh, hey, you want to be a mechanic one day? Come and take a tour. I'm like, dude, you got in the, like, I haven't even gotten the rig, dude.
Yeah,
Like
you're
that,
trying to get this the year one of your interns to introduce you to Mitch Payton.
Dude, it's and like another one was like in the team Kawasaki rig, or hey, I'm one of the guys that
I
I'm
got
working with
coffee with
is,
Mathis.
yeah, you're right. You're like, I had a guy that was helping out the freaking
I got kicked out with
Club
Cooksey.
X guys. Yeah, got kicked out. Dude, it's insane, dude. It's honestly insane, the opportunities, man. And like it's I'm really proud of it. And dude, yeah, if you're looking to do one, Birmingham's a fun one. I like Nashville.
Okay.
I really enjoy.
When is
I tend to
Nashville? I'm
like
going to look at flights.
Nashville.
April
I think it's
11th?
like April. Yeah,
Ah.
April something. Nashville's a fun one. I love Indy. The people are really great. The
I
dirt's really
do love
good.
Nashville.
I like St. Louis. I love the Northeast ones because I'm a Northeast guy, so it's nice to be home for those.
Yeah.
Phoenix is a good one. So, I mean, we have fun in
It's a
so many
showdown
places.
too, East-West showdown.
Yeah,
And
that's gonna be
SMX
a good one.
next. That's a
Gonna be
good
a good
one.
one. That's a good one.
Birmingham is a
So,
good one because it's going to be
everyone's
warm. It's
listening, let me know.
Alabama.
Yep. And I think your
Small
listeners get it.
stadium though,
I think
right?
I've
Because
got
I don't
a.
know who plays there. Is that a
It's
college?
not super small. It kind of reminds me of like the Tampa Bay
Okay.
Buccaneer Stadium. So it kind of reminds me
What's
of
the
that one. But
capacity of protective?
yeah, and all of your listeners, you've got your own Big MX promo code.
No way.
Yeah, collective as well. So yeah, I think you've had
is
it
it
for
still
a while.
active? Does anyone use it?
I'm pretty sure. I haven't seen it for a minute, but yeah,
Wow,
your
hurtful.
listeners get a promo, get a cool promo code for the experiences too. So
Okay, so they can go on the website and sign up.
oh, 100%. Yep, it's open. Use a promo code to save at checkout, and yeah, we've got a litany of programs and riders that people can choose from to hang out in, and yeah, we have a good time, man. We really enjoy it.
That's rad. I really like that.
I'm excited, man. I'm excited for the rest of the season. I'm excited to get you to a race
Yeah.
so that we can bug each
I'm
other
literally
again.
looking at stuff right now. I'm like, yeah, we're gonna make one of these
Yeah,
happen. I
Nashville's.
could even
I like
maybe even do
Nashville because
Detroit.
Detroit's good too. Hey, buddy, that's a 20-minute drive for me. And
Well,
hey, yeah, we can both hop on the blow-up bed,
there you go.
I get that.
Absolutely. If this thing's a
Yeah.
rockin', that's because I'm
Yeah.
jerking off next to you. I can't let this like thought in my head slide by without circling back to it. I think it'd be funny if Cooksey did a VIP experience where you just get thrown out with him. Like you're also arrested, or like you also get escorted out by security. You're like walking out with your phone and stuff like that. That would be entertaining to me.
What are some other unique experiences that you could do?
Oh, you go to the Super Motocross Voices guy's house to watch Supercross and come up with memes together.
That's one. You could walk a million miles in a one Supercross event with Dark Side. You could definitely do that.
Yeah.
Dark Side gets, dude, he knows every single person that steps foot
I bet
through those gates, I feel like.
if they were allowed to have press box access, if Sean Brennan approved it for Darkseid, I truly mean this because he's such a good guy.
He's
If
a
so,
great dude.
if I think Darkseid could sell a VIP expanded experience to essentially be his like shadow and hang out with him for the day, I bet someone would pay him $1,000.
All day, dude. He's the nicest. Like,
Yeah, he's
super
just
fun to
such a
talk
good
to.
dude, and you could probably
He's got
talk
stories for
about damn
days.
near anything from music to
100%.
construction to like, it'd
Yep.
probably be like another blue collar guy like me. And yeah, just like bro down with Darkseid for
Dude.
Detroit Supercross, $1,000.
That'd be epic, dude.
Do
That
it.
would be
That'd be sick.
epic.
Why
Yeah,
not?
and I think I even talked to some of the FXR guys. I know Brad and Andy are always freaking busy like crazy, but I
Yeah,
got to
of
bug those
course.
guys again and see if we can do something cool with them because they, I mean, they talk to so many
Why, you
people.
need bigger pants again or what?
You probably do. Actually, your boy's losing some weight, buddy.
Are ya?
I snapped my
Attaboy.
Achilles. I snapped my Achilles and
That's
shattered my
right.
ankle
I
at
remembered that.
24.
Yep.
And dude, when I tell you that was worse than
You
me
couldn't
trying
get
to
up to go to the
deliver
fridge or what?
by my no, dude, I was like literally just sitting there ordering DoorDash and I gained like 50 pounds because I couldn't do anything, dude.
Yeah.
And like I couldn't walk, couldn't do like even just
Okay,
like
I was gonna
if I
say, there's some
lowered.
pictures, dude. You're looking fluffy.
Fluffy is not the
You
dude.
were
I
looking
look like
fluffy.
I was 800-pound life, dude. And dude, after that, I saw a couple pictures of me with my kid, and I was like, oh, I look like I'm getting ready to eat my kid as like a TV dinner or something.
Yeah.
So
Dude, if I
yeah,
see a picture of
we
myself where I
shrunk.
have like a double chin where I shouldn't, I'm like, ooh, gotta tighten up.
Yeah,
Gotta
dude.
tighten
So
up.
we lost it. I sold the 450, got the 350, and now I actually have to like work to ride a dirt bike again. So it's your boy's getting it's getting swell. We're losing. We're dropping.
Fair enough. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. Did we talk about lappers? We got to at least talk about the lappers when it comes
Yeah,
to
yeah, yeah.
Indy. Like, we're not going to talk 250s because that was the Davey show. And I at the end of the night, I didn't feel like Hunter Lawrence was the 450 winner, but like, I guess based off how everything sort of panned out. But the lapper
Yeah.
situation, let's just like, first of all, there's not much I can tell you about the lapper situation because there were no penalties. So there mustn't have been anything wrong, correct?
Dude, I agree with what you said so hard, dude. Like, I
Bro,
don't understand how
can
there
we
was
hold people
no
accountable? Why are
that's
we
it.
against holding people accountable? It's not like we're not gonna kill these people by firing squad.
Or a consistent
Yeah.
templatized system where like,
Got to be
yeah,
black
if
and
you
white.
jump, yeah, if you
It's got to
jump
be me
on
and
a,
you.
yeah, me, Ebony and Ivory, dude. If you jump on a red cross, like, you know, on a red cross flag, this is what happens. If you jump on red flashing, this is what happens, and keep it consistent across the board. And the
I don't
same
know
thing
how they
with the
did
Viper situation.
mid-season rule changes.
Dude, it's
That felt
confusing. And
illegal.
then it really did. And like, and it just makes the racing harder to follow for people. And we're just fans. Imagine what it's like for, you know, Joe in that situation and Hunter and stuff. It's hard. But as far as privateers go, I love Gypsy, but I really do like Jace. But I disagree that there shouldn't be privateers out there. I think privateers 100% should fully be should they should be out there. If you don't want them out there, then like yeah, let's give them their, you know, a 250 250 A main and a B main. That way we still get those guys like the seat time and the shine that they deserve because they're world class athletes. Or you know what you can do is just hey, I'm gonna institute a $5,000 fine for anyone that holds up racing. If you see a blue flag and you don't, you know, acquiesce and give the right of way to the riders that are behind you getting ready to lap you, you are fined $5,000. I
If you're gonna do
guarantee you
that,
won't
though,
win.
it has to be like a Swiss watch consistent.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, there's
When you're
no
dipping your hands in
if,
someone's
if.
wallet, it has to be on
On
spot.
par. But I guarantee you, we'll see a lot more riders that are like, oh crap, like they're coming up behind me. I don't want to have to deal with anything. I need that money. I don't have the money to dish away. I barely can afford Chipotle right now. So like there's no way I'm gonna, you know, mess this up. I think you will see a lot more riders moving over. I think you see a lot more of a consistent respect for those riders. And riders would be a lot more aware. If you hit them in their pockets, just like anything in this world, you go where if you hit them in their pockets, you're gonna get their attention. So I think that's what you do. But yeah, to say like that privateers shouldn't be out there, I think they should. I personally, not, a lot of them are my buddies, so I want to see them do good. But also, I'm a fan of the sport. I remember the days when privateers, a lot like a Tyler Evans, those dudes were top five. You know what I mean? Like
At times,
it's like
yeah, absolutely.
I
And
yeah I remember
it's a
that they were
subculture of
there.
the sport,
And
and
thank you. That's perfectly said. Subculture of the sport. They have their own following. They have their own fans. And you need that. You need that. If anything, like for differentiation to showcase the Jets and the, you know, the Malcolm Stewarts and the Eli Tomacs and stuff, like to show the difference in like, yeah, these guys are world class. Now look at how good these guys are even. But you know, to say like you shouldn't see Morans or Cade or you know, you name them, Harlan out there, I don't agree with that. I think you should. Those guys work their butts off and they are gnarly dudes. So I just think you got to make a consistent rule set and hit them in their wallets if they're not following suit.
Right. And also, like, we're such a knee-jerk industry.
Yeah.
When something like this happens and they're like, oh my God, we got to change the format of the fucking sport because we
Yeah. They're
had
so
here
they're too
we didn't
reactive.
because yeah we're so reactive because we didn't have the foresight to not put a triple crown on the most technical track slash riding surface, because that track always gets crazy rutted, and it wasn't a technical track, on top of the fact that you had 45-second lap times. So, like, if these riders are on a percentage point the same difference from each other each week, or say if it's like 5 seconds, 5 seconds on a 1 minute track is a lot different than 5 seconds on a 45-second track.
Oh, 100%,
Especially
dude.
if you
Yeah.
factor
Oh my
in that
gosh.
first lap, where you know you as well as I know, if there's 20 guys on the line, the guy who comes across 20th might be coming across as many as 15 to 20 seconds behind the leader on lap one. If he's giving up 4 or 5 seconds per lap while trying to find a rhythm, trying to navigate this racetrack, in 18 laps, they're gobbling up all kinds of guys, and they start to work into a certain section of the lineup that these guys are not, first of all, they're not used to being lapped, as well as the fact that they're used to fighting for a position on forward and not having to deal with that. So you have two things happening at once, and basically coming to a crescendo as we come to the completing laps of all of these short sprint races. If it was a longer full race, Say, like, if they had done the full 26, they would have lapped all the way up probably into, like, the either it would have been, like, the 10th, 9th, 8th. And those guys are more spread out, way easier to get around those guys that are that have a lot more distance between them. You as well as I know, the guys at the back of the pack, typically there are maybe 2 or 3 seconds between them, not even.
Yeah. Well.
And they're just circulating.
I can't disagree with anything you've said.
Yeah.
And to me, it's just common sense. You know?
And like there are guys who are like they get in the way or they happen to disturb things more often than not. And there needs to be a hard and fast rule that like if you don't adhere to the flag, there'll be a consequence. And you have to be razor sharp consistent on that consequence, period.
All day, dude. All day.
So and like people. Yeah, like I don't know what you set the dollar amount at, whether it's $5,000, $10,000, $2,000. I'm sure none of these guys would like to see any amount of money leave their pockets. So yeah, I think they definitely think twice. Or you have that licensing thing, but the fact that after what happened this last weekend, whether it was intentional, not intentional or otherwise, the fact that there was not a single penalty handed out is very discouraging.
Yeah. I agree, because then it's like, well, is it really that big of an issue if there's no penalty? So now I don't think a lot of the riders are going to take it as seriously.
Yeah.
Or if they do, it's only going to be.
What are we even ranting about? This seems silly.
Exactly, and then there's going to be a gray area that is like, okay, well, if no one's really dishing out penalties, I really don't have to, you know, be as diligent with my actions on the motorcycle, right? I don't have to be as crazy aware, this will just blow over and blah blah blah. So yeah, there's too much ambiguity with these rules and like the lack of consistency across the board. It just makes for things that are just hard to keep up with and hard to follow. And I feel like this is the coolest form of motorsport, in my opinion. And like look at like an F1, dude, those rules are so to the freaking T that like there you can't contest them. And you can yell.
Bro,
like,
oh, one guy was given a time penalty for singing Smooth Operator to himself because they didn't have the copyright.
Dude.
That's a real thing.
Tell me about it. Yeah, 100%. Or, hey, if it looks like you're riding a little bit on the dirtier side, not rubbing is racing, obviously. But if you're purposely making something that's like dangerous, they're gonna fine you big boy money and they're gonna have a time penalty as well. So like it's I don't know. That level of professionalism is really needed. There's a hunger for it
when
it
right. comes to
rules and decision making.
We're all too often the redheaded stepchild that isn't taken seriously. And when there's situations like this, we give credence to not be taken seriously.
Yeah.
So, and then, those are the types of things, the systematic issues that exist within many motorsports, but motocross is the one that I spend the most amount of time and attention to that, essentially besmirches the name of the community and makes it harder for big companies to advertise with us. And ultimately what it would come down to is like, we always talk about, oh, we need sponsors. No, we need advertisers. We need Procter & Gamble to come in with Gain laundry detergent, a product that our audience and our community probably uses a whole awful lot of that still in 2026, there isn't a salesperson in this industry that's been able to communicate that to someone who works there.
Oh, dude. Yeah. It's nuts to me. The only people that I think have come the closest to like outside quote unquote sponsors is I have to give credit to like the Troy Lee setup. They always have like,
some but I think that's because Troy's not afraid to have the conversation and ask for the sale.
For sure. But like, look, he's one guy in a sea of how many different teams, right? So, it's definitely time that we had some more. It just seems so obvious. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. Just consistency. Just consistency and professional adherence to like, to rules. That's it, you know?
Right. It's no different than a rider expects to when his bike hits a bump just like that, he expects his bike to go just like this. And that's what makes a good handling bike is a consistent and a predictable bike. A good racing series is a consistent and a predictable series.
100%.
When it comes to judgment calls. Looks like Cole Davies woke up in the 250 East. He took the points lead by a narrow margin. He's only got 1 point ahead of three other guys. There's only two points separate the top four in that series. And it's actually not even that many. It's only nine back to Daxton Bennick. But does Cole Davies relinquish the points lead in 250 East before this thing's done?
Oh, Brad, it's hard to bet against the kid. Not only
good, man. He's good.
He's got talent, but he's not riding like a second year supercross rider, dude. He's riding almost like what Deegan had, which we're like, you know, we're so used to seeing these rookies and these young kids come in and kind of ride over their head. They get nervous. They don't know when to back it down. Their race craft needs to be honed a little bit. They need some of that experience and that tenure. He looks like he's been in this class for 5 years, dude. The way that he attacks the whoops, like, it's not just raw speed. It's not like, you know, when I think of raw speed, I think of somebody like a Zach Bell or somebody who just was super fast, but they needed some refinement. He's just fast and refined and very confident. So
I think
physically
he's well developed too, though. Like, he's not as tall as like a, the kid's getting his shoulders, his thumb fixed there. Adams could play middle linebacker for the New England Patriots. Like,
yeah, big boy, yeah.
Davies would be playing wide receiver if they still allowed white guys to play wide receiver in the NFL. You know what I mean? Like, he's lanky. He's kind of, he has that sort of similar broad shoulders, but like all sort of sinewy and lean.
Almost like a swimmer's build.
Yes, like I compare it to Sexton. Sexton has like that. Yes, has a great build for moto. He's very broad in the shoulders. He's square to the motorcycle, and I think that's what allows him to be in control when he's coming across the whoops. Like, I think his physical strength, on top of the fact that he's young, youthful, and wants to send it, great combo. I think that's why he's going to win that championship.
Yeah, it's hard to bet against him, man. I love Joe Shimoda, dude. That's my boy. I like what he brings to the motorcycle. I love how he rides. I love that he's such a heads up racer. He's willing to take it to those guys. He's got a great personality, all that cool stuff. But man, Davies just looks like he is on a different, like in a different gear than those guys. Like, look at his whoops, dude. Last weekend they were giving guys a nightmare. Look at Jalik. Jalik was flying, but when it came to those whoops, I was like, buddy, this is
dude.
Like,
he had a couple though. He like sent it randomly a couple times and like
there were a couple that were good, but like, other times I was like, dude, that looks like me out there.
Yeah.
But, no, like yeah.
I thought for a second it was, but your hair's shorter or longer than his.
Yeah, that's my little bit. High praise though, because if you think that's true, then I'm beginning
straight up
skinny and pond skinny. But yeah, dude, you don't see those inconsistencies with Davies. Davies will skim those whoops every single time. Davies will make sure that lap time stays the same. Davies will race hard. He'll get on the inside. He'll do whatever he needs to do. And Brad, if he does not win the championship this year, you and I will be infinitely shocked.
Yeah, no, like, and not to say that he doesn't have stiff competition, but
well, he does. Yeah, those guys are.
Shimoda, I think he still has his best race ahead of him this summer or this winter. Hamaker, he can be awesome, but like, I hate to say it, like, sometimes when I watch Hamaker, I always sort of wait for a shoe to drop. Like, he's kind of like, unfortunately, sort of, I'm once bitten, twice shy. I really want him to do well. He's one of the nicest guys in the pits. Super talented, super nice guy, hard on his sleeve, great guy. I think Hamaker, honestly, if I was to make a prediction as far as like, I think Davies is the fastest. Then you have Hamaker, then it's Shimoda, and I think it's going to finish that way in the points.
Agreed.
Yeah. Like, aside from, Glendale, where Eli got a 12th. If he just had like an average night for him, which I think this year would be like a second roughly based off of like his average scores of his other races, he'd have a 10 point lead, 8 point lead, 8 point lead. if you just gave him like an average finish that one night.
Yeah.
It seems crazy that Eli Tomac has won a lot of races this year and has a 4-point gap. Like, it's 4 points. It's nothing with this many races to go, but like, they've separated themselves. Yeah. The question over the next three rounds is whether or not Cooper Webb can find a way to join those guys. But the other race winner, I don't think we see him until after the East Coast swing. Chase Sexton. Really? I don't. Maybe you see him after this break. Otherwise, I wouldn't.
Is it really an injury like they're saying? Is it a practice injury? Is it something that's really like nagging him? What do you think it is?
I think it is a practice crash that has opened a window to like, okay, like if there was ever a good timing to get injured, this would be it, or to have a crash. So it's a good excuse to go back to the drawing board and come back out either for the final rounds of Supercross. And hey, yeah, we came out and we showed that in 2026 we can make this bike work, or we focus on outdoors. Maybe ride a Supercross or two and focus on being fast outdoors. Because he's already pre-qualified into the finals or the playoffs by winning a race.
Yeah.
Racing Supercross at this point, like none of those races aside from like fulfilling sponsor obligations and doing it for the competitiveness side of things, like the championship is out of question now for Chase Sexton. Obviously you're a competitor. You want to race, you race for a living. You want to be there. That makes sense. Would I be surprised to see him race, again this winter? Not at all. But, if you told me that I don't see him until the first round of outdoors, not surprised.
Not surprised. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Then yeah.
Wouldn't even bat an eyelash. Yeah. I'd be like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. No, that
sounds about right. Yeah.
Yes. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. As far as Chase and the championship, I think it's two guys. I think it's kind of always been two guys this year so far. Like, I think you have, Webb and Tomac and Broxson both have wins, but I think those are the only two rounds that they were in championship form. And I think you have to be in championship form. You have to be in championship form at least 15 out of 17 races. To lay claim to this thing. And like, you can have a couple off nights, but you can't have as many off nights as those guys have had already.
I agree with that. I would agree.
So we're going to find out. Birmingham, Detroit, St. Louis. Those are the next three rounds. If Cooper Webb goes back to the drawing board and comes back swinging as the 2025 Supercross champion that he is, he could climb his way back into this. And honestly, so could Kenny, but that would take I think that would be his Mona Lisa. If he is to come back and even contend for this championship, that's Ken Roczen's greatest Supercross season ever.
If Ken can win one, and I hate that Ken.
He already won one.
You know, we're Ken fans. If Ken can come back and win a Supercross championship, like, he gives us hope every year. This dude will win a race. He'll be lights out fast. And like that glimmer, like that spark, I'm like, oh my gosh, we're going to do it this year. Like, all of us Kenny fans, we're going to see our boy win a Supercross title.
And then just proud papas.
Where just, oh dude. And he rides so well and it's unreal. And then something happens where he just like, he'll get like a fifth or a seventh. And if half the time, it's not even his fault, you know, or majority of the time. And it's like, oh, dude, there was my glimmer of hope. Like, I just feel so much more wrecked because, you know what I mean? Like, oh.
And like, as a, like, yeah, I think as a athlete in your 30s, I think it all also just sort of like, you start to cheer for those guys a little more as far as like you see like a, at least someone who grew up in the same era as you, like, I don't think he ever rode carbureted four strokes. Although I think he may have like raced like one when I think I've seen like one picture of like 94 on like a really old Suzuki. Yeah.
Yeah. With that massive pipe.
Yeah. Yeah. The pipe that goes back past the back fender. Those are Jesus. Yeah, honestly, if I had that's the funny thing. If I had Ken on the podcast, like I know he passes up a lot of media stuff, because like I think he gets asked so often, and these guys are pulled in a thousand directions. But if I had Ken Roczen on this podcast, which I have not yet, I've interviewed him in person, but I've never had him on the podcast. If I had him on the podcast, I would ask him about like those early years, like big bike Suzukis when he was like, I don't know, 12, maybe 11, riding either
Yo,
250Fs or
crazy.
450s. Like memories of coming over and racing like the World Mini and Loretta's, and I would talk to him about like living with Shorty down in Texas. I might even call up Shorty to like jump in for that part of the conversation. That's the kind of conversation I'd want to have with Ken
Oh
Roczen.
man, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
That'd be
And
awesome.
maybe you know what else I'd do with Ken Roczen? I would take all of his all-time in I would get him to come up with his favorite all-time Fox kits, and then I would come back with my favorite and see if there's any crossover. Because he's
I
been
would
in
love to talk to
Fox
him.
for 25 years, more,
Dude, I would love to
30.
talk to him about it. Was before he came over here. I forget what year it was, but he battled Herlings. They went back and forth I can't remember what the track was. They had an all-out slugfest battle one time, and dude, that was one of the coolest battles I have ever seen. Like GP or Moto, like definitely top five for me. And I would love to talk to him about that. I'd just be like, dude, what was it like? If you can remember that far back, because you both were like 14, but like, what did that feel like to be like going that fast, that close, and just showing off like this is the new generation of moto, you know?
No, and like it's kind of also gotta be a similar feeling for guys like Tomac and Malcolm Stewart, who are like looking at each other like, bros, we bang fibulas on 85s, like KX85s, and Comac's on a wrung out RM85 just at the
Dude,
ranch.
that's how you know it was a long time ago. No one races Suzuki or Cowie or Yamis. I mean, you have
Bro,
80,
Chase
90% of the
Brennan,
classes now.
bite your tongue. Chase Brennan
Oh, on the Suzuki,
races
you can say, yeah.
85s on the Suzuki. That's RM
I saw that
Army, and that
today.
thing
Yeah, saw that today.
rips. I saw that bike at
He was
Loretta's.
top 10. He was top
Dude,
10
that kid
today, yeah.
rips. I have
Yeah.
lots of time for Chase Brennan. That bike looks sick, and I think he's on a Super Mini this year, and that means when I go back to the ranch, there's gonna be a Suzuki Super Mini back under the awning and in staging, and like hear that thing barking. I can't wait. That's Shades of Nico Izzy. That's
Yeah, Josh
that's
Litchfield's days.
Lichtal. That's all those
That's
boys. Yeah,
Millsaps, dude.
Millsaps on
Treadle,
85s. Yeah, those are the
dude.
best.
I talked so Ian and I became
Partridge.
buddies over the years. Partridge and like talking to Treadle about like the 85 days, dude. It's like, dude, those people don't under do the Sunoco Suzukis. Like those were amateur racing, and then forget about it, dude. Then you get like the the KX85 days, the like Baggett when he was on it, and
Oh yeah.
LeMoyne and
Zach
all these fast dudes,
Bell,
Zach Bell.
Lemoyne,
Oh dude, like that was
Blake
80s were
Green.
different back then. And now, dude, like if you're not on an Austrian bike, like it's hard to
Oh
get competitive,
yeah. I think
you know?
Yamaha is building a Super Mini for their younger, I think it's is it Zoe Moore and Tace Morgan. Who, remember that name? Tace Morgan is going to win AMA National Championships. But I think this is either his last year or his first year. I know it's his first year on Super Minis. His Mini Senior won last year.
Gotcha.
Yeah, they're putting together a Super Mini, which of course Yamaha doesn't make a Super Mini. So this thing is as exotic as it gets. So that's going to be pretty neat.
That's gonna be cool.
My favorite class to this day at Loretta's is Super Mini 2. It's the 13 to 16
Oh man.
class. It
It's
is
the class that we wish we were just
always,
fast enough and rich enough to race to have a super modified 85. Because I know yours was as bone stock as mine was, so yeah, yep.
Yeah, no, Like, I had nothing on my bikes. The only reason why I had a Pro Circuit pipe on my 125 is because I smashed the stock one in a start, and my dad, the stock pipe was like $300, and Pro Circuit platinum pipe, like
$280 or something.
Yeah. Was just, we're saving $20, which I felt like, all right, well, now my bike's factory, clearly.
I had the exact same story for
my dad. My last year on 80s, I used to break front brake levers so often because I put the bike down so often that my last three races, I raced it with a broken front brake lever. My dad literally, like, where, you know, where it like kind of breaks off, where it's like a little kerfed spot. Yeah. He just like sort of sanded it down and made it like rounded so that it wouldn't probably kill me if I landed on it. He's like, yeah, you can finish the season like that. I'm like, thanks, Brian.
Sick of buying levers.
Yeah.
Oh man. That was me. My first year 250Fs, dude. I dropped that bike every lap.
Oh yeah. Well, you've seen you've seen my 07, right? Or my 06?
Yeah, yeah.
The broken in half bike?
I was like 130 pounds, 140 pounds on a 250F, dude, just getting just pulled around, dude. Could not handle a big boy bike.
Yeah. One day we're also going to do a podcast about like people in IT talk about the UK or the UK turn, like changeover. We're going to talk about the, like, dawn of the four strokes, like an honest conversation with between people being like, what's the better bike? Is it the 125 better? Is it the thumper? Remember calling them thumpers,
the thumper class, the four stroke class?
I always got that thumper. That was a real conversation that happened in 2004.
Gosh, that is so funny. The four stroke class always won by Tyler Bowers because he was a 8 foot tall 14-year-old.
That's right. Or like going on thumpertalk.com and thumpertalk. Age, sex, location.
Oh my gosh.
Too good, bro.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
Last time here on the Big MX Radio podcast for a Tuesday, the 10th of March. We have Dave Drakes here on the Big MX Radio podcast. Where can people find more information on all things the Collective Experience?
Check us out at the Collective EX on Instagram, YouTube, we're the Collective Experience, at the Collective, pretty much everywhere. Yeah, Collective EX on Instagram, the Collective Experience on TikTok. I mean, we're trying to make a resurgence back on there, so be patient with me, Brad. But we're doing it, man. TheCollectiveXP.com. Please check us out. I forget what the promo code is for Brad, but I'm going to have one up there that we can share on socials because
I've started that one for you. It's got to be Big MX Radio or Big, I don't know.
Yeah, it has to. Big MX something, or like TCE Big MX or something. But I'm super stoked to get a lot more interns and fans in the program. I'm stoked to get you at a race, and I want people to come meet you and stuff. And, come have a good time, enjoy racing with us, and I stand behind it. We are the best fan experience in motorsports. No one loves the sport and bringing the people behind the scenes of the sport like I do. And I'm really proud of what we've curated, man.
Hell yeah, man. You're a passionate dude, and that's why you do what you do. And that's exactly why you're on this podcast. Dave Drakes here on the Bigger Max Radio podcast. All right, dude. Appreciate your time. Don't hang up just yet,
buddy.
But for podcast sake, we're going to cut things off right there.